Hello, you're listening to the Thoroughly Good Classical Music Podcast. My name is John Jacob. Find Thoroughly Good on X, Instagram, Facebook, and now WhatsApp. Thoroughly Good Classical Music Channel on WhatsApp. Subscribe. Don't worry, you won't be sharing a number, and you can get all the latest updates without having to look at any of that pesky social media stuff. Find the link on the website and in the show notes and basically everywhere. Some of the conversations that surround classical music at the moment, a lot of it amongst classical music listeners, performers, managers, writers, is about elitism in classical music. Perceived elitism, actual elitism. I've often found it difficult to really put my finger on whether it really exists or not. I've long resisted the idea, I'm happy to admit, because I've always regarded classical music as just music that, when you're listening to it in a live performance, for example, it's not just the music you're listening to, you're also listening to the emotional responses that you're having at the moment, a sort of a music as meditation type experience, that kind of thing. It's niche, it's not often talked about. People get a bit scared about talking about their own emotional responses. God only knows why. In the weeks that have passed since this podcast with Classics Explained YouTube content creator Ben Levy was recorded, my thinking on that whole elitism thing has shifted. Unfortunately, it's only anecdotal evidence I can provide you with here, rather than hard data. I'm going to leave the hard data to the people with the budgets. The first piece of anecdotal evidence to share with you originates from my local gym, where, in quite a dramatic turn of events, I found myself with my new personal trainer, Joe, navigating the leg press and talking about what stopped him from attending classical music concerts. "It's a club, isn't it?" he said. "It's a club that I need to be inducted into before I can go." I was a bit surprised to hear this. We'd only got to know each other 2 weeks before. I have paid him for a full block of sessions, so it's not like he came with an agenda. But when I pressed him on the subject, he just said that was the image that he had of classical music, and that was what stopped him from even entertaining the idea of listening to it. How terribly disappointing. Then the second piece of evidence. Just recently, I pitched some articles to a third-party publishing platform that specialises in arts coverage. I've written for them before, albeit years ago. I meet their considerable criteria for writing for them, and I figured they'll be pleased to discover that I don't want to be paid, which is handy because the money that they do offer as a gesture isn't really enough to cover a weekly shop. I do drink a lot of wine after all, so that money is quite useful. The rejection was obviously charmingly done, even if the reasons that were shared were spurious at best. I wasn't especially hurt. Rejection is often a motivator for me, but I was disappointed because it seemed to confirm the hunch that I'd held for 6 months that I'd always resisted. It confirmed the hunch that there is a bit of a clique. There are people who think they know more. There are people who want to make sure that that image is maintained. And now I think that it is that is contributing a significant amount to the image problem that classical music has. And that's terribly disappointing, because I'd always thought I'd got it wrong, and then you experience something that makes you go, oh no, I really hadn't. Listening back to Ben Levy's responses now, I recognise that he and I are like-minded souls, trying to do the same thing with slightly different content. We are independent voices, and being independent is tough. I have watched The Rite of Spring. I've watched a bit of The Rachmaninoff. They are utterly charming films.
Tell me, Maestro Stravinsky, does it last a very long time this way?
To the end, my dears!
He's raving mad, I tell you! Raving mad! Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring is so raving mad that its premiere a year later leads to the most notorious riot in the history of modern music. Stravinsky's born in 1882 near St. Petersburg. He becomes a law student, but fancies learning music in his spare time. Having Daddy Stravinsky as a famous singer has its perks. He grants young Stravinsky access to the best teacher imaginable, none other than Rimsky-Korsakov, Russia's most famous composer. Rimsky thinks highly of Stravinsky, but he's less impressed with another of his students, Sergei Diaghilev. Though in 1909, it's Stravinsky who needs Diaghilev, not the other way round, because Stravinsky is a virtually unknown composer, and Diaghilev, well, he's a highly established music impresario. That year, Diaghilev's on the hunt for some fresh talent to write a ballet for his newly established Ballet Russe. He hears Stravinsky's compositions at a St. Petersburg concert. He takes a punt on him and Stravinsky comes up with The Firebird, which Diaghilev's legendary ballet company stages in 1910. It's an overnight sensation, and the experience teaches Diaghilev two things. One, that he's onto something with the young composer. Two, that his high society Parisian audiences have a certain view of Russians as primitive, untamed representatives of an exotic culture. How about another ballet by Igor Stravinsky that exploits this prejudice like never before? Diaghilev teams Stravinsky up with the ideal man for this job, his set and costume designer, Nicholas Rorich. Rorich's a kooky mystic and expert in Russian folklore. Together, they devise the Rite of Spring in 1911. It will depict a group of Slavic tribespeople celebrating the advent of spring with pagan dances and ritual games. It's to climax with a sacrificial maiden dancing herself to death to appease the gods of spring.
Stravinsky spends How did you come to make them, first of all?
Well, irreverence is the flavour of the month for us when it comes to explaining classical music. Classical music, as is well known, has this accessibility problem. And my aim was, in a sense, to revamp program notes, which tell us that the keys change from A to G. And so we say, so what? And rather to demystify the whole process. And that sounds a bit grand, doesn't it? To say demystifying classical music. But actually, the aim is to take the viewer on or the listener on a journey with us and to laugh a little bit about the stories behind the most fabled classics and hopefully along the way to teach them something about classical music. How they started was essentially I was working as a curator at the V&A at the time, the Victorian Albert Museum, and I was involved in a variety of theatre and performance exhibitions there, the last one of which was called Opera, Power, Passion, Politics. And I got really interested whilst there in the idea of how one explains these classics, you know, whether that be a Verdi opera or a Rossini opera that we've all heard at some point in an advert or a well-known film as a soundtrack, but we want to know why it's so famous. And so my aim was essentially to create a YouTube channel, because that's the only format I knew at the time. I don't think this was 6 or 7 years ago, so there wasn't such a thing as, don't suppose there was such a thing as TikTok or the like, but to create an animated series on YouTube, sort of with a nod to Horrible Histories, I suppose, which explain these concepts as clearly as possible to the viewers. So I started this channel really on a shoestring budget, started monetizing the channel maybe 2 or 3 years into the process, and still not making anything like a profit on this channel, still pouring my own money into it. But the payoff is that I get 69,000 very happy subscribers, and even better, millions of people going out and buying more or listening to more classical music. And the great thing is seeing all the comments that talk about, you know, I am from the Midwest of America, I've never heard Wagner's Ring Cycle before, and suddenly my little town has been introduced to the Ring Cycle and we've all booked tickets to go to Bayreuth, you know, something along those lines. So it's, as I say, it started out as a classical music on a shoestring budget. Over time, I've gone from working with friends who were university students doing animation courses to now working with two producers called Anthony Guskett and Jesse Stevens, and an animation studio called Sion Studios with an amazing animation whiz, Joe Looping. And essentially the way it works is the process is the same. So I write and record these pieces. They're mixed wonderfully by Jane Shirley, who is does a fantastic job at finding the best recordings of these pieces, mixing them seamlessly with my voice. So that involves 15 hours, let's say, of Wagner's Ring Cycle, reduced to 14 minutes with a bit of Ben Levy on top of it. What then happens is that recording goes to the studio, and I and the studio and the producers come up with character designs, and there's a lot of back and forth on that. There's a lot of back and forth on the storyboarding, and essentially we get to, as you say, the grand production at the end of it. So that's where we are now, a bit more on from the shoestring budget, but essentially it's that's how it started, and that's where we're at.
Why? I mean, I know why I make content, and I know how little money I raise from it, and I'm trying my hardest to monetize it, but I know how little money I raise from it. But at the same time, I know why I'm doing it, which is, you know, it's for a bigger goal. I recognize that I'm not necessarily going to get a return on my investment. Why, given the considerable effort involved, what is your equivalent long-term goal with this?
My goal when I started this does not quite align with the goal I have now, and I'll explain that. When I started this, the first film was Scheherazade, me running around the streets of Edgware Road dressed as a sultan, explaining the 1001 Nights and, you know, the wonder of Rimsky-Korsakov's tome poem. And back then I was passionate about classical music. I just wanted a few of my friends who listen to classical music or who want to know a bit more about classical music to appreciate it as much as I did. And when the channel got bigger, I started to notice a lot of comments from people saying, God, there needs to be more resources like this. And then COVID came about, the lockdown, and I started to get teachers contact me saying, can I show the kids in my classroom these films? I said, yeah, go ahead. And I realised, oh my goodness, there's more of a demand for this than I ever thought there was. Nowadays, I very often see comments from the called the know-it-alls of classical music, who will say, you missed out this piece of class, or this inspiration behind George Gershwin's Rhapsody, or that inspiration. It was nothing new when jazz was nothing new when Rhapsody and Blue came out. And it's interesting because I'm realizing quite what a pushback there is now when I release these videos, and actually how I'm even more galvanized in that effort to break down the accessibility barrier to classical music.
How do you interpret that pushback then?
I interpret that pushback not as classical music is for the elite, for the white male elderly audiences who tell you not to clap in between movements. I actually interpret that pushback now as even from people my age who are at music schools, at the conservatoires, whatever gender they are, whatever sex they are. And it is interesting. There is a sort of a snobbery about how much do I know about classical music? How much do you know? What can I tell you that you've not included in your video? And it is fascinating. There is a lot of there is a lot of performing in the comments to our videos about, yes, well, you haven't touched on this very obscure influence to Debussy, you know, in this opera or that opera, which, you know, and it is fascinating. There is that sort of pushback, and the other source of pushback is, I suppose, institutional, which is that there is a lot of reluctance to, I suppose, maybe give airtime to what we do. I still think of myself as a bit of a radical underdog in the classical music industry. I'm not a member of the classical music industry. I'm a dissatisfied lawyer who wants to change it. And
No, but you're not a dissatisfied lawyer, or are you telling me that
oh
you are
no, I'm not a
dissatisfied?
dissatisfied
Right,
lawyer. I'm
right.
a lawyer who is very
Yeah,
dissatisfied
fine, fine, fine. Okay.
with the classical. Maybe I am a dissatisfied lawyer. I don't
Who
know.
knows?
I'm dissatisfied. I'm dissatisfied because I'm angry about the fact that I think there is a lot more to be done in an industry that. That it, is quite ossified, and that there are. This is a long-standing debate that's been happening for many, many years, and there's been so much movement, especially in terms of broadcasting and discovering, say, female composers, black composers. I think that needs to be done quite a bit more, and also representation in terms of performance. But I still think so much can be more can be done in terms of broadcasting ideas, podcasts like your own podcasts, YouTube channel like my YouTube channel. We don't we aren't sponsored by, we aren't mouthpieces for the large classical music establishment organisations. And I think that is important. Maybe you are, I don't know. But
Sometimes I feel as though
yeah,
I
you feel as though you are, but and I am sometimes told that I am. But
Right.
it is an interesting one in that there is, I think, still a lot of pushback in terms of getting new ideas about classical music out there and about being a little bit irreverent, I suppose. And that really is what I highlighted at the start. Irreverence is key. I don't want to be giving music theory lectures on my classical on my channel. Someone just wrote in the other day saying syncopation is not unexpected beats out of time
No, it's
as you
not.
move forward.
No,
And I said,
I mean,
well,
I didn't write that comment, but no, he's
yeah,
right.
well, I said, yeah, I know, yeah, but the point is. I want to explain this in Rhapsody in Blue in 10 minutes, and I mention that in 5 seconds. And how's the easiest way to describe it to the uninitiated? Maybe
So
I should.
maybe there is a point there about how those with knowledge feel perhaps if their knowledge is skirted over, that they are somehow undervalued.
Yes, I think that might
Maybe
be the case.
that would be the compassionate way of explaining. I mean, I'm still interested in understanding what you're angry about. I'm wondering whether it's the same thing that I'm angry about. I don't think it is, but let's just find out.
I am angry about the idea that to appreciate and love classical music, you have to be in the know. You have to know something special about the piece you're listening to in order to appreciate it. Now, I appreciate that our channel does tell you the stories behind these famous pieces of classical music and does tell you what to look out for. But I hope that I'm not didactic in that I hope I'm not telling people what to listen for, but instead helping people how to listen to classical music.
But where, so I've heard that line. I'm not disagreeing with you, not really, although I am. But I've heard that line a lot about people believing that they need to be in the know before they can appreciate it. Where does that crop up? Because I'm not quite sure whether I'm the right person to judge, because I have got a music background. Where are people saying that you need to be in the know? Because I don't see it.
I see it, well, I can only say anecdotally how I see it, which is when I ask around my friends and the people I see who say I don't want to go to that opera, I don't want to go to that ballet, I don't want to go to this chamber music concert because there's nothing to see on stage. And if there's nothing to see on stage, there's no story. And if there's no story, what am I doing there? What am I
You need
missing?
some new friends, Ben. You need some new
I'm sorry. These are,
friends.
my friends might be very lowbrow, but that's it is that's the challenge I see in terms of classical music. maybe what I'm angry about is also the fact that if I want to book a concert with a world famous pianist at the Cadogan Hall next week, and that pianist is not playing a symphonic piece, not playing a piano concerto, but is simply on their own playing some Bach partitas, that I'm still likely to be able to get tickets now for that if I were to book now. You know, it wouldn't be, that concert would not have booked up many months ago in the way that the Opera House books up for operas, or in the way that the Royal Ballet would book up for the Nutcracker.
There isn't the demand that what you're reflecting, yeah. There isn't this demand, and you want there to be a demand around events.
I do, and I think it's worthy of that demand. When I think, you know, the way I got into classical music was actually through listening to Classic FM on the way coming back home from school, and I am a musician myself, but it was playing with my mother, Guess the Composer, you know, when a piece of classic, when something on Classic FM came up, and slowly I just got into this world of, you know, of classical music, and I suppose it maybe became less intimidating for me.
Was she not testing your knowledge? I mean, she was kind of testing your knowledge by making you try and guess what she already knew. I mean, wasn't she sort of doing what you're... I'm challenging you.
I'm much more into it than she is, funnily enough. But I think you're right. It is the fact that it doesn't have the demand. And the idea that it is the province of people who are, as I say, already in the new, and that the audience, or the classical music consuming audience, will only be a very small percentage of the population. It is potentially fixed. And that is the frustration.
Do you think there's a clique?
I think there is a clique, yes. You know, when I've done an experiment, which is when I go to a concert and I see people in their 20s and 30s, I go up to them and I ask them, what's your background? What's your knowledge of classical music? And so often it is, I'm a Royal Academy student, or I've been to the conservatoire, or it is sold to the people who are already comfortable in that world and actually quite progressed down that well, quite far progressed down that path.
So it's sold to the choir.
Sold to the choir, exactly.
How do we sell it to the people outside the cathedral?
Yes.
Because you must surely have an idea. I hope you've got an idea. It's one thing to be angry about it, but have you got an idea about how
we... No, I am one of the...
Or are you just standing at the side throwing spears?
I'm a cynical, bitter, angry person who's got no way to tell you how to go about it. No, but no, I'm not. I don't think I am, and I'll tell you why. Because this channel, come back to this channel, has shown me from the, I'd say every single day, I am getting someone writing to my email address, to the inbox for the YouTube channel, saying, essentially, I am new to classical music. I have got into this piece through watching your video, and all my friends have. I've been looking precisely for a resource like your own. And some of them even say, and I've booked to see the Magic Flute in Delaware. Or I have booked to see, you know, Scheherazade in Australia or wherever it is. And that to me is really, really exciting. That is broadcasting out of the cathedral. And I suppose that is precisely where YouTube works best. And my audience is a mixture of a very broad audience. I suppose I, in terms of people who are actually classical music aficionados amongst the audience, I'm not sure what the percentage would be. But judging from the comments and from the interaction I have with them, and the fans are... amazing, by and large, apart from that one person who was angry about syncopation. They're all amazing.
It wasn't me. It really wasn't me. I didn't leave that comment at all. But are they not responding to just a different kind of context? It may not be music theory, but it is. I mean, you know, I've seen them, and I respond to especially the Rite of Spring, because actually there are some visuals there that actually tell the entire story in a concise way. I'm still responding to a different kind of context, but are they responding to just a different story?
Yes, perhaps. I think they are, and the reason they may be is because of the number of viewers whose comments, when they, for example, are commenting on the Rite of Spring, Fantasia and the dinosaurs is brought up very, very often in that. And I think, well, isn't that interesting how Fantasia reinterpreted the Rite of Spring or recontextualized the Rite of Spring for a generation of viewers watching who were brought up on Fantasia? Maybe what we are doing is recontextualizing again. I would never compare myself to the brilliance of Fantasia, but it just shows you how classical music is perhaps not something to be displayed behind glass in a museum, but does go through a history or a history after it's made of recontextualization. And you know, we explain that actually in Vivaldi's Four Seasons. You know, that is the perfect example of a piece that never ossified, that went through this sudden revival in the 1960s with the birth of performance practice, and the culmination was the greatest selling classical music album by someone who introduced Jimi Hendrix sounding whining effects at the beginning of the autumn movement. Maybe what we're doing on this music channel is recontextualizing, and maybe that's what people are responding to.
Who would you ideally like to be listening to this?
I think the person I'd like to be listening to this is someone whose ears are, can be prized open, and whose ears are ready to hear a range of new sounds, new rhythms, beyond what they hear on an everyday basis, and who is open to, after hearing this conversation, going to the channel, watching some of these videos, and then perhaps even developing the love of, the same sort of love of Stravinsky as I have when I started in the car with my mother guessing the composer on Classic FM.
You're looking for curious people, open-minded people, people who are willing to take a risk.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about strategically, thinking of this as content production? Who do you want this to... Who do you want to get the attention of?
What would be good is to get the attention of someone, some institution, who is prepared to help us on this journey. Potentially, whether that means putting money into it as well, because as I say, this is still a passion project, this is still self-funded, but it would be great to form partnerships with some of those institutions to help them maybe reach audiences that they have been unable to reach, and to form a sort of symbiotic relationship where we, as the channel, can help, I don't know, some venue which is staging a range of operas, help that venue reach a larger audience in terms of who will be coming to their series of concerts.
So that sort of suggests that you see the potential of it as a content delivery platform, as a content production house, specializing in digital marketing. I mean, I'm not doing your marketing work for
you.
That's precisely it.
I
can see how it could be integrated into live performance or into marketing materials. I mean, is that also where you're heading?
There's that. It would be great to have a kind of like a horrible history style TV show, you know, where these are packaged as, you know, two or three episodes in half an hour on famous composers, maybe with a book alongside it, which does exactly the same sort of thing in explaining classical music to the curious. But one thing I should stress, and this is quite an interesting point, is that there is this interpretation from our audience that the channel is geared solely towards kids because it's cartoons. And you may have appreciated from watching the videos that you've seen that kids is only one audience here. I hope that these videos work on multiple layers. So maybe adults who are, you know, who know a lot about pieces can hopefully learn or listen with a new set of ears when they after watching the videos. And I hope that if this does one day become packaged as a TV series or something along that line, a YouTube series with proper funding behind it, that it can be for all ages, not simply something for children.